her sister on the bat, and they compared it to the picture on the Hiroshima atomic bomb of America.
At that time, the social media, the media journalism was extremely controlled. Yeah. But now it's blasted. It's exploded. You can see now in Gaza pictures of what's going on there that you could have never seen before.
No.
Now, beyond that, now Israelis have not only committed genocide, but they have committed things that go beyond the mentality of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Genocide has a specific limit, has a specific goal, but they're very indiscriminative in what they're doing.
Right.
And so therefore the world, the organizations that were accused of being terrorists, of being terrorism, Hezbollah and Hamas, are today now being rendered as heroes because now they can rationalize that this is the reason why they are now resisting.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason why they fought all these years.
Hurrah.
This is the reason why they had arms all these years. And so it is now rational to say that Hamas has the right, all the right to have arms, and they shouldn't be rendered as a terrorist group, rather a resistance group.
No.
So it's the actions of the enemy itself that really brought the resistance up into the top levels in the minds of the people and, you know, kind of cleanse them from the things that they had previously heard in the media.
All right. Sheikh Rouhani, what about the Islamic Republic of Iran's role in defending Hamas and Hezbollah? Are they doing the right thing? I mean, some people might say that, okay, by defending such groups in the region, more killing and more massacre is going to take place. Of course, I do not agree, but the question is that is this type of defense is going to put more fuel into the fire in the region or not? Since Iran is a strong country in the region, I mean, in comparison to Palestine or what's taking place in Gaza, you know?
Globally talking or internationally talking, there's an international law saying that you have the right of self-defense.
Right.
Whenever you're attacked, you have the right to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So this legal rule is applicable for all the countries, not only, for example, Palestine. Now let's get back to Palestine. What happened to this area, for example, some 60, 70 years back? So there were people living, and then some other people were brought in this area.
Right.
So the problem started from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the main problem is that when you have people who come to your land, to your territory, to your country, now what's your decision?
So I mean, a region without Zionism will be a more peaceful.
There were some Jews. They're living with the Palestinians.
What causes?
No one can. Yeah. But the problem is that when you try to, for example, get the territories of the people, so the people do not have any other alternative except to resist against you.
All right.
So because this is exactly oppression. So whenever there is oppression, you have the right, you are in the right position if you defend these people, if you protect these people against oppression.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why whoever support oppressed people legally, morally, ethically, whatever you can term it, it is a true thing. It is the truth to defend
the oppressed people. This has been one of the slogans of the Islamic Revolution
of
Iran at the time of the late Imam Khomeini. And just look at what the late Imam Khomeini predicted about Israel more than 40, 50 years ago. Okay? Really, no forecaster around the world can predict such thing. You know, bro, just one by one, they're true. That's all right.
It's like live
such
TV.
A binish that he had insight and the basira that the late Imam had. Also, the rahbar, Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. May Allah protect him. That's right. Okay, so, and as the rahbar said, you know, we are really observing the akhlaq of the war.
Yeah,
you know, the code of ethics at war, you know, you could see that in the attacks that were made by Iran, you know, the Fatah supersonics and, you know, all the things reached even around Tel Aviv. So, but the case is that we are not like you. We are not attacking civilians. You know, this is a war. But unfortunately, they are not observing such, you know, rituals and the rites.
It's not a just war. It's not a balanced war. Mm-hmm. It's a war that is based on completely one-sided legal stance, and the other is completely, you know, they can do anything. Mm-hmm. And they have that immunity in the United Nations Security Council. Anytime anything goes against them, it's easily vetoed by more than one country, to be honest. Right.
Thank you very much, Brother Muhammad and Sheikh Rouhani, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. Inshallah, one day Palestine will be free, and inshallah, Hezbollah and the resistance groups, you know, become more and more successful in their operations. And may Allah bless the soul of Sayyidina Surlah, you know, Shahid Sinwar, Shahid Safiyuddin Hashimi, and Brother Ismail Haniyeh. Thank you very much for your presence, and thank you very much, dear listeners, for being with us in the program Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Free Palestine.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
The Commission of Detainees Affairs and the Palestinian Prisoners Society revealed degrading and shocking conditions under which Palestinian detainees from Gaza are facing in the Zionist regime's notorious Ofer prison, Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, a report by two Palestinian rights organizations published recently comes following recent visits by their legal team to 9 detainees from the Gaza Strip. The report outlined the systematic torture to which these detainees are subjected, which was described as theft and deprivation of detainees' rights. The report established, based on the testimonies of the detainees, that all previous reports by human rights organizations fall short to reflect the level of brutality that has been and is being practiced against Gaza's detainees. According to the report, one of the psychological torture methods aiming to humiliate Palestinian detainees is forcing them to chant to a so-called captain, "Thank you, Captain," in Hebrew. Those who refuse to comply are reportedly severely punished. The detainees spoke at length to the lawyers about the humiliating and degrading positions they are forced to endure. One of the examples of these humiliating positions is being forced to sit on their knees or stomachs in the camp yard for long hours during court sessions held over the phone. In terms of medical treatment, Palestinian detainees told the lawyers of the Palestinian organizations that the prison's administration continues to deprive them of medical attention. Some of the detainees who were allowed to speak to the legal team were suffering from wounds and injuries that had not healed as a result of their systematic deprivation of treatment. The two Palestinian rights groups voiced in their report their deep concern over the spread of skin diseases among the detainees from Gaza in view of the occupation authorities' ongoing policy of depriving them of hygiene products. The reports indicated the detainees have been forced to shower without soap for several months, and through follow-up, the lack of personal hygiene tools was the main reason for the spread of skin diseases among the prisoners and the detainees in various prisons. The Palestinian detainees also mentioned suffering from cold, especially at night, due to being deprived by Israeli occupation authorities of adequate clothing and covers. The report read, as is the case for thousands of prisoners and detainees in the Israeli prisons and camps, the occupation, as part of its systematic policies, is to transform cold weather conditions into a tool for abusing and torturing detainees. The report of the two organizations pointed out that a revenge spirit reigns amongst Israeli occupation troops and prison guards, competing who can be more brutal towards the Palestinian detainees. The report went on to highlight the main challenges that face the rights organizations in addressing the topic of the detainees from Gaza, especially in relation to the issue of the enforced disappearance of hundreds of detainees in Gaza. The two organizations stated that some of these challenges include ignoring the precise number of detainees from Gaza in Israeli occupation prisons and the unprecedented level of brutality, which include but are not limited to the crimes of torture, abuse, and the crime of starvation, in addition to systematic medical crimes, sexual assaults, and their use as human shields. One of the other obstacles that the report mentioned is that the Israeli occupation authority continues to prevent the International Committee of the Red Cross from visiting all prisoners and detainees. The Commission of Detainees Affairs and the Palestinian Prisoner Society revealed at the end of the report the names of some of the detainees at Ofer Prison based on accounts of prisoners with whom they were unable to speak. Of these 45 Palestinian prisoners mentioned in the report, 5 are children. Flouting a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire, the fabricated regime of Israel has faced international condemnation amid its continued brutal offensive on the Gaza Strip. Currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for Genocide Against Palestinians, the child killer regime of Israel has been waging a devastating war on Gaza since October 7, 2023. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 43,204 Palestinians have been murdered, and at least 101,641 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, starting on October 7, 2023. Moreover, at least 11,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say that the majority of those murdered and wounded are women and children. The Zionist regime war has resulted in an acute famine, mostly in northern Gaza, resulting in the death of many Palestinians, mostly children. The Zionist regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Later in the war, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians began moving from the south to central Gaza in a constant search for safety.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. By Allah's name we start. Salam to all of you, dear listener. You're listening to Iran Radio, and this is today's special. Today is Tuesday, 3rd of Jamadil Awal, 1446 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 15th of Aban, 1403 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 5th of November, 2024, of the Christian Gregorian calendar.
Palestine, Palestine, oh Palestine, on your land Allah plays great signs. Though the world sees your scars and hears your cries, Allah is your God and you will survive. On that blessed night our prophets journey, when all prophets arrived there miraculously. In the Mosque Al-Aqsa, Allah chose thee. You're blessed that your land was touched by the feet.
Now we listen to chapter Isra, verse 1.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
سبحان الذي أسرى بعبده ليلا من المسجد الحرام إلى المسجد الأقصى الذي باركنا حوله لنريه من آياتنا إِنَّهُ هُوَ السَّمِيعُ الْبَصِيرُ.
Exalted is he who took his servant by night from al-Masjid al-Haram to al-Masjid al-Aqsa, whose surroundings we have blessed, to show him of our signs. Indeed, he is the hearing, the seeing.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
By using the phrase Masjid al-Aqsa, here meant Baytul Muqaddas, which is the farthest mosque, for at that time no other mosque existed farther than that. We had blessed its entire surroundings with material, spiritual, worldly, and religious blessings. For that was the place of worship of the highly esteemed prophets, as well as the place for the descending of the revelation, which was a sacred point, with flowing streams surrounded by the fully fruit-bearing trees.
They cannot break us, they cannot shake us, patiently waiting for guaranteed freedom. You can take our homes, but we will remain strong, 'cause Allah's on our side, and He's where we belong. Palestine, Palestine, wipe those tears from those saddened eyes. Palestine, Palestine, Jannah waits for your innocent life. Palestine, Palestine, we'll be free, yeah, Palestine.
The main question of this program is, why helping Palestine? We live in a world where to somehow a human being praise is more important than the human being. To others, the kind of passport the human being holds is more important than the human being. The skin color of some humans creates enough dehumanizing effects to justify and rationalize their suffering versus a different skin color, which is merely the result of the number of a pigment, melanin, in a skin. Scientifically speaking, if we as Muslims do not want to stand in solidarity when our fellow human beings who belong to a different faith and are victims of similar aggression, then we don't have a leg to stand on when we expect non-Muslims to stand up for a struggle where Muslims are the victims.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Ali, your host. Today we are going to talk about the reason that we need to support Palestine and the Gaza issue. The First Intifada revealed the brutality of the Israeli occupation to the world. Protests were sparked after Israeli forces rammed their truck into the line of cars, killing four Palestinians in the Jabalia refugee camp in December. Only a day after their funeral, attended by 10,000 people, Israeli soldiers shot into a crowd of protesters. They killed 17-year-old Hatem Abu Sisi. Across the occupied areas, Palestinians rose up and mobilized protest, riots, strikes, and created networks of local committees to provide health care and education. From 21 December, Palestinian workers struck mainly in the fruit and hospitality industry. Palestinians' ferocity during the First Intifada was impossible for the Israeli state to contain for more than 5 years. The First Intifada ended because of the promise of peace talks with the Israeli state in the early 1990s. The PLO had never seen the road to liberation as being through revolts of ordinary of ordinary people and was happy to be part of these talks.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every bar.
Today is a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
Let's look at the history of the illegal regime of Israel. The First Intifada changed everything. From the 1950s until 1980s, political and military direction lay with the Palestinian leadership in exile, not within the occupied territories themselves. In 1987, frustration with the misery of the life under occupation exploded in an uprising or intifada. It took both the Israelis, the U.S., and the PLO leadership by surprise. The First Intifada revealed the brutality of the Israeli occupation to the world. Protests were sparked after Israeli forces rammed their truck into a line of cars, killing four Palestinians in the refugee camp in December. Only a day after their funeral, attended by 10,000 people, Israeli soldiers shot into a crowd of protesters. Across the occupied territories, Palestinians rose up and mobilized protests, riots, strikes, and created networks of local committees to provide health care and education. From 21st December, Palestinian workers struck mainly in the fruit and hospitality industry. The Palestinians' ferocity during the First Intifada was impossible for the Israeli state to contain for more than 5 years. The First Intifada ended because of the promise of peace talks with the Israeli state in the early 1990s. Think twice about the ways to support Palestinians. Of course, donating, along with being subjected to a state and settler violence on a daily basis, many Palestinian people are suffering from dire economic situation. The Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands means that many people do not have any employment and living in poverty. For people who are able to donate money to the various organizations working in Palestine to assist them with basic resources, this will help to assist the people of Palestine. Sheikh Azhar Nasser.
We don't allow people to come. You know, as one brother beautifully put it this week in a video that I saw, he basically said, you don't get to criticize the table manners of someone who's starving. Israel is basically saying, no, you have to be peaceful victims. You have to be peaceful. You have to die in silence. You don't criticize the table manners of a starving person, you give them food. My dear brothers and sisters, it's also important for us to remind ourselves of the Islamic laws that govern combat. There are a lot of discussions about, do you condemn this, do you condemn that? Let me make something very clear. The laws that govern combat in Islam are higher than the double standard international laws and the human rights discussions. If you look at what Islam says about how someone is to fight an occupier or an enemy, Islam teaches Muslims that when you fight in a legitimate war, you cannot kill children, you cannot kill the disabled, you cannot kill the sick, you cannot kill the elderly. Islam teaches Muslims that even if you are in the heat of battle, you do not attack non-combatant monks, priests, rabbis, or any religious figures. You do not attack non-combatant men or women. You do not burn or mutilate dead bodies. These are the teachings of the Prophet. You don't torture prisoners of war. You don't cut down trees. And the list goes on. This is the Islam of Rasulullah. This is the Islam of Ahlul Bayt. But what we want to make very clear is that do not try to make this a discussion about what happened this past week. The history of the people of Palestine goes back very far. One of the greatest crimes that can be committed against human beings is when human beings are driven out of their homes.
Dear brother and sister, thank you very much for listening to this episode of today's special from Iran Radio under the title of Why Helping Palestine? Inshallah, we'll continue this interesting and this necessary topic to know about more during these days. Thank you very much and fi amanillah.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Israel Watch welcomes you. The Hebrew media highlights the harsh reality faced by the Zionists today due to the aggressive war on Lebanon. Hezbollah's use of missiles, drones, and heroic confrontations against infiltration attempts in southern Lebanon has been significant. Many assert that eliminating Hezbollah, as Netanyahu claims, is an impossible task. To discuss these topics, I'm pleased to welcome my guest in the studio, Mr. Samer Karaki, a political analyst. Welcome, dear sir, to this episode of Israel Watch.
Thank you very much.
Dear sir, let's start with your thoughts on what the Israeli minister mentioned about the idea that destroying Hezbollah in the war on Lebanon is unrealistic.
It's quite evident that Israel has exhausted all its objectives after experiencing a significant surge from September 17 to 27. From the pager's shock to its highest point, which was the assassination of the leader of the martyrs, Sayyidina Nasrallah. They believed that the situation on the ground would be very in favor of Israel, both in terms of logistics and field operations. The resistance fighters leave their weapons on the ground and leave, and the resistance forces and their advocates would eventually surrender. However, what we have witnessed on the ground, this bravery, determination, spirit, and motivation following the martyrdom of Sayyidina Nasrallah has greatly surprised them. We've observed a significant operational advance in the resistance actions, both in the field and logistically, through the connection between the ground forces and the leadership, often referred to as monitoring, linking the top command with the fighters on the ground. This has clearly astonished the Israelis. Therefore, as we see, we are still talking about the situation in the front line after more than a month of resilience from these fighters. It's been over a month since these fighters have held their ground, and what we're witnessing is truly remarkable, a series of heroic feats that are rare in history. It's astonishing that an army of four or five divisions, along with a reserve unit, struggles to secure villages against such resistance. Historically, no one expects a resistance movement to be able to confront the classical armies on the international level. However, it's clear that the fighters are working to trap the Israeli forces, pushing them into a corner. So far, the resistance has not engaged in guerrilla warfare, but has conducted a form of semi-classical warfare, demonstrating exceptional effort and performance on the ground, which is quite rare. I believe the Israeli forces will continue to be taken by surprise, especially regarding the issues of missiles and drones.
Today we have witnessed a strong belief that the Israeli entity is unable to disarm Hezbollah, especially from the perspective of the Israeli minister. Do you think this might influence the decision of Benjamin Netanyahu's administration to continue this war to some extent?
We must first consider the overarching theme of the Israeli administration's agenda, which is characterized by extreme right-wing ideologies. This war is fundamentally existential, with significant religious implications rooted in Talmudic beliefs. Additionally, it ties into a broader vision for a new West Asia that encompasses not just just Lebanon, but also Syria, Iraq, and even parts of southern Saudi Arabia, as highlighted by figures like Smotrich and Netanyahu. Given the higher stakes and ambitious goals set by Netanyahu, it is unlikely that he can gradually withdraw at the moment. By the challenges faced by Israel and the increasing displacement, affecting not only the settlements, not only in the 43 settlements in Israel, but also reaching as far as Haifa. The recent unprecedented attacks on the prime minister's residence and the intelligence breaches at the Golani base demonstrates that resistance forces still possess significant intelligence and security capabilities. Furthermore, there is another aspect to this war, which is the United States, Israel's staunch ally in the genocide. This calls for the resistance to remain steadfast, and it calls the resistance to uphold the allegiance and the principles for which they're fighting. The surprises and advanced missiles that have been acquired are noteworthy, with more strategic missiles being developed. We observed last week the rapid pace and range of these drones and how Hezbollah possesses a significantly larger drone stockpile, which are different from the previous models. The role of the United States is crucial. It continues to give the green light to Israel, whether under the Democratic leadership of Biden if Kamala Harris wins the elections, or under Trump. What differs is that there will be various visions and strategies established by these administrations, which will determine the continuation of their actions and policies.
There are many factors that prevent Benjamin Netanyahu from making a quick decision or ending the war. However, a crucial point is that Netanyahu's objectives in this aggressive war against southern Lebanon and Lebanon as a whole seem difficult to achieve. It raises the question of where exactly Netanyahu aims to go with his strategy.
If the resistance had not been in its current state and had clearly collapsed after the 27th of September, and considering the logistical challenges to some extent, Netanyahu could have advanced not just to the Litani River, but to areas of significant importance and symbolism for the Israelis, such as the Nile and the Euphrates, and potentially re-82, despite the resistance at that time. However, the situation has become exceedingly difficult for the Israelis. He initiated an effort to form a new West Asia, this effort being characterized by an existential and religious war, often referred to as the War of Resurrection. Netanyahu has returned to discussing the northern Litani region, now focusing on a mere 3 to 5 kilometers. Ultimately, he will have to concede to the demands of the resistance, yet he finds it challenging to acquiesce in this retreat before the settlers, because they would hate to hear that their prime minister, after more than a month of negotiations, has backed down and made concessions.
Netanyahu lives in a world of stubbornness today.
Certainly, he must back down and make significant concessions, and yet the missiles continue to fall down on the settlements, reaching Haifa and approaching the borders of Tel Aviv, targeting military bases and installations. And finally, he's not achieved any of his goals, even regarding the war in Gaza. I mean, the Israeli army wakes up from its delusion and realizes that this has been a significant insult to these military forces, which claim to be the fifth largest army in the world. So, if he were to advance further, he's currently cautious about reaching that point, haunted by the memories of 2006, especially concerning Al-Khiyam region, Wadi al-Hajr and others.
We will continue discussing this topic within this context. The Israeli concerns regarding Hezbollah's missile capabilities, which can strike deep into Israeli territory, are quite pronounced. Despite War Minister Gallant's claims that Hezbollah has lost 80% of its missile capabilities, leaving only 10% remaining. The military correspondent for the enemy's radio has confirmed that Hezbollah is capable of bombarding the territory with missiles for an entire year. Mr. Samer Karaki, the impact of the missiles launched by Hezbollah towards the heart of the Israeli territory significantly influences the reality of occupation, especially when we consider the enemy's perspective from any angle.
For the first time, the battle in the history of the Arab-Israeli conflict is clearly being taken to enemy territory. Despite everything that happened in 1973 and the events that followed, and even in 2006, we're witnessing a scene opinion that is much larger, deeper, and more precise. In 2006, the Israeli forces reached the Wadi al-Hajr and entered Bint Jebel, which is still difficult despite everything that is happening. Regardless how they may frame it as reconnaissance, penetration, or invasion, it's still a great insult to the Israeli army. Now, however, we see missiles that are more precise and have a wider range with a substantial number of displaced settlers. We are talking about 90,000 to 120,000 people, but now that number has risen to between 400,000 and 500,000. The collapse of Tel Aviv is evident, with 2 million people seeking refuge in shelters.
Galen claims that Hezbollah has only 20% of its missile capabilities left, a statement that even the Israelis find hard to believe.
The Israeli entity is certainly trying to project an image of resilience, recognizing that the battle may be prolonged. They are committed to utilizing missiles and implementing an organizational strategy for each scenario they encounter, as determined by the administration. They are also attempting to convey to the Israeli public that they have achieved significant tactical accomplishments, that we are close to ending something strategic that concerns the resistance in Lebanon, which is the strategic missiles, the precision-guided missiles. This message serves a similar purpose to the statement made by Avikai Adrai, a colonel in the Israeli military forces, regarding the psychological and moral framework. He conveys a message to the resistance front in Lebanon and to the supporters of the resistance in Lebanon from all sects that their operational field situation is very difficult. However, those familiar with how the resistance conducts its operations and safeguards them understand that these operations are managed with wisdom and rationality, despite the circumstances. It's acknowledged that the conflict may be prolonged and surprises can occur, as evidenced by events in Qasariya against Netanyahu, among others.
Hezbollah's Islam resistance still has plenty of surprises in store. If it can launch 100 missiles daily at the Israeli entity, it is also capable of sending drones into Israeli territory for 1,000 years. This was highlighted by a former official in Shin Bet, who emphasized that these drones can cause significant harm to Israelis. Mr. Karaki, the drones remain the biggest concern for the Israelis today, especially after their success in striking deep into Israeli territory and reaching distant locations without even being detected by Israeli defensive systems. What does such an achievement by Hezbollah signify?
We can infer from this that when the drone reached the home of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, the coordination between the resistance, monitoring, and control was executed to the fullest extent. Essentially, while you are launching rockets for distraction, it's important to note that rockets are faster and the drone is slower. Despite its slower speed, the drone successfully reached its target, thanks to significant camouflage that took advantage of the rapid rocket launches, effectively diverting the attention of the Iron Dome and all other defense systems. If it can reach the Prime Minister, it suggests that similar operations could target various political, security, and military leaders within the regime. It all comes down to timing, execution methods, and the situation on the ground in terms of coordination. For instance, they mentioned the other day why there has been a decrease in resistance operations and rocket fire. It's because there hasn't been large engagement from the Israeli side, and the Israeli forces have clearly retreated in many border areas, especially at the front lines of the resistance. The timing of launching these drones is based on execution methods that align with the realities on the ground, meaning the coordination between what is happening locally and what the leadership perceives from a distance alongside the field situation of the resistance fighters. It is clear that this point is a point that the Israelis did not clearly calculate, particularly regarding the drones, their speed or slowness, the load of explosives they can carry, and the substantial missile stock that Hezbollah has in store.
Wasn't included in his military calculations. The former official in the Shin Bet described the issue of Hezbollah drones as a significant threat to the rest of the Israeli entity. How do you think these drones will impact the reality of the war in the coming days?
We want to consider the reality of the drones, not only from the perspectives of resistance, but also from the role of the Iraqi factors, which play a significant part. We've seen clear developments in the Golan. In my opinion, as the operations of resistance continue to evolve, we
can expect many surprises on the ground in locations and bases that we did not anticipate would be reached by these drones. As I mentioned, those which have reached the top of the executive authority in the Israel city can target any object. However, the situation depends on various operational conditions. Additionally, regarding the Mediterranean, despite everything happening there, the resistance is managing to keep it neutral as part of its gradual operation. The Mediterranean has somewhat stagnated concerning gas platforms and other related stations. Don't you think that the resistance, which has managed to reach the doorstep of the Israeli leadership with its drones, can directly target the gas platforms in the Mediterranean and significantly impact the Israeli economy? However, things are progressing with a sense of rationality and strategy.
What did the Israeli occupation gain from repeatedly talking about espionage operations carried out by the Islamic Republic of Iran inside the entity, knowing that Iran has not yet even commented on these Israeli allegations?
The basis is an attempt to justify the security intelligence breach that the resistance carried out in reaching Netanyahu, the Golani Bridge, and the famous base. As events unfold, Israel is anticipating a profound and precise response from Iran. The Operation True Promise 3 is expected to shake the region even further, especially in light of the substantial military achievements occurring in the south and the increasing operations from Yemen and the Iraqi factions. This volatile regional situation driven by the Operation True Promise 3 may compel the United States to intervene and prevent the escalation of this war, which could impact American bases and the status of Gulf states allied with the U.S.
Thank you so much, Mr. Samer Karaki, for joining us in this episode of Israel Watch. Take care.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night, while the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. But through the tears and the blood and the pain, you could still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Thank you.
Gaza tonight. A blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames. And nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hezbollah continues to pound Israel's military bases, settlements, and forces with drones and rockets in retaliation for the regime's aggression against Lebanon. The non-aligned movement condemns the recent Israeli aggression against Iran as violations of the international law and UN Charter. And Iran launches two domestically made satellites in cooperation with Russia, successfully putting them into Earth's orbit using the Soyuz launch vehicle. Thanks for joining us. Air raid sirens have sounded in the northern occupied Palestinian city of Haifa as Hezbollah resistance movement carries out fresh retaliatory strikes on Israeli targets. Israel claims it intercepted two incoming projectiles from Lebanon. Earlier, Hezbollah said it targeted Krayat settlement north of Haifa with a rocket barrage. It also hit the Meron air surveillance base three times with rockets. Israeli forces positioned on the southwestern and eastern suburbs of Meron al-Ras were targeted as well. Hezbollah also carried out strikes on several Israeli settlements deep inside the occupied territories. The movement also launched aerial attacks on a number of targets, including the occupied city of Safed. Hezbollah says its operations are in support of Palestinians in Gaza and in defense of Lebanon and its people. Israel continues its relentless air and artillery strikes on Gaza, killing more civilians, most of them women and children. At least 20 Palestinians lost their lives after a building housing the displaced was hit in Beit Lahia in northern Gaza. To the center, Israeli air raids killed a group of Palestinians in Gaza City and the town of Zawada. According to Gaza officials, the regime's forces killed at least 70 Palestinians in a matter of 24 hours. The death toll from the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza since October of last year has topped 43,300. More than 102,000 others have been injured. Our Gaza correspondent, Muti Abu Musaba, has more about the latest Israeli attacks on the besieged strip.
Yes, actually, more Palestinian people are still falling victim to the ongoing and ceaseless Israeli airstrikes targeting and hitting various parts of Gaza Strip. At least 70 Palestinian people have been killed for the past 24 hours as a result of those ongoing Israeli airstrikes and attacks. And let me begin with the middle area of Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli occupation forces targeted a couple of the makeshift tents. The first one was in Az-Zawaida town when the Israeli fighter drones attacked that tent, killing at least four Palestinian civilians, a man, his wife, alongside their children. They were killed and they were charred